For me, Benbulben is probably one of my favourite of all the Irish mountains. Now, it's not the tallest mountain in Ireland, and some would argue that it's not even the most impressive. But when I was young, I was always struck by the way it rises so suddenly and dramatically out of the ground before levelling off into a flat plateau. A place where your imagination can roam wild. From ancient Celtic warriors to the wreckage of World War II bomber planes, Benbulben's summit conceals a world full of stories, magic, and mystery. And today, I've decided to explore it for the very first time. Of course, deciding to go up Benbulben and climbing Benbulben are two very different things. Abandoned mines, treacherous bog, and sheer-faced gullies make Benbulben not the most inviting of mountains to ascend. So today, just to be on the safe side, I'm getting some help from Sligo Mountain Rescue.
It's in the very top. It's just the one, that's it, the two lemons.
Heidi, do you want to introduce yourself first of all, maybe?
Okay, Julian, it's very nice to meet you. My name's Heidi Wickham, and I've been a Sligo resident for 21 years. And the last 8 of which I've been involved in my local mountain rescue team, which is why I've been up and down Benbulben a few times, and we've guided various different groups up and down, and we're going to do the same today with you.
Yes, I feel very, very fortunate. I have to say from the very start that this is a childhood dream of mine, because...
No pressure.
I mean, you are. I'm putting my dreams in your hands. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
My parents are from Sligo, from Ballymote and Clooney.
Oh yes.
They
yeah.
recently moved back to the area, so we would have holidayed quite a lot here. And I always remember coming over as you go into town, to seeing basically the majestic Benbulben.
It's an incredible sight.
It really is. Just so sweeping and majestic, where the surrounding countryside. And I always wanted to climb it.
Yes,
but
yeah.
We were too busy visiting relatives and seeing all the cousins and everything, so we never actually got a chance to do anything like that.
It's that's a really familiar story, actually, Julian, because the amount of people, we actually run a guided walk every year for the last 3 years, and the amount of people who literally live in the shadow of this mountain for 20 years, 30 years, however long, and still haven't made it up there. And I think one of the reasons is for the look, the iconic look of the mountain, it actually looks quite fearful and quite a difficult challenge. And really it isn't. If you're coming the way that we're coming, it's actually not too bad at all. So what we're doing is we're coming around the kind of the back of the mountain, if you like, in a place called Luke's Bridge. And what that does, there's a kind of a sweeping bog valley, and it allows you to take relatively gentle ascent up the side of Benbulben up to the plateau, and then basically it's a straight line straight to the high point, which is known as the Trig Point, which is 526 metres high. Not huge,
no,
but
no.
I mean, you know, big enough.
It's big enough. I think we're going to slowly, throughout the series, we're going to work our way up towards Carntool, which is about 1,100 to 1,200
right,
metres.
Yes.
So we just want to start nice and easy. And weather-wise, how are we doing today?
Well, the forecast is actually quite good. I mean, it's quite breezy here now. It's a little bit overcast, as you know, but the forecast says that the... lovely blue skies are going to come in from the west. And I mean, you know, in seriousness, we wouldn't attempt this if there was very low cloud or mist, just because it gets very slippy and it's just not worth it. And we'd say that to anybody. But no, it looks fine. You know, there's no cloud actually on the mountain. There is a saying around here, which is, if the mist is down, stay down. And we always stick with that. But we're fine today.
Benbulben would have had an influence for me, even by virtue of the fact of watching the clouds gather in Benbulben. If you're out saving hay in the fields, you would look over towards Benbulben and the rain would gather around the shoulder of Benbulben there. But oftentimes, to my dismay, the rain would travel along the mountain and not out towards Mullaghmoor, which if it did come out towards Mullaghmoor, we could put away the rake and fork and go home, or I could read the Dandy or the Beano or something like that.
Sligo native Joe McGowan is a local historian, folklorist and author, who, after returning from America in the late 70s, has become lifelong friends with Benbulben, which he fondly regards from his kitchen in nearby Mullaghmoor.
when I was growing up here, we had nothing to compare what we've got here with other parts of the world, because we didn't have television at the time and very few magazines or books or anything like that. It's only when we started to travel, and I travelled a bit myself, that I realised what we've got here, and the beauty here is comparable to anything that can be seen in any part, not just of Europe, but of the world.
Joe, tell me, I suppose, if you could describe Ben Bulbin as a person, what type of person do you think he would be?
That's a kind of an association test, and immediately I would respond by saying a wise old man, because this man has lived for centuries, for millennia, and observed the landscape, is older than anything that has happened in the landscape. I remember one time after I built the house, you can see I have stone ditches built around my own house here, and at a point in time, at a conjunction of two stone ditches, I found an arms dump, which was essentially a long box with a little piece of tar paper on the top, and it was sloped into the ditch. And it would hold maybe two rifles or three rifles or something like that. That was about the size of it. And I wasn't lucky enough to find anything in it. It was empty. But I took a photograph of it. And sometimes a photograph will focus your mind. But I looked at that old arms dump built into the ditch. And I looked further then towards Ben Bulbin. And there was Ben Bulbin, that huge feature in the landscape. And I saw that as the great father figure there, looking out over the countryside, that had seen everything and knows everything, that had seen the Fomorians, the Tuatha De Danann, all the different invasions that we read about in books. So this is Ben Bulbin, has seen all of this. Ben Bulbin knows everything. He knows that the people go out in the dark of the night to the stone ditch and take out their guns and fight for their freedom. So I see all of this in the landscape, and that was inspired by just finding this little arms dump in the ditch there. It was a key to the whole landscape for me, this landscape dominated by Ben Bulbin.
Joe isn't the only person to speak so passionately and eloquently about Ben Bulbin's presence here in Sligo. It seems that this mountain touches all who walk upon its slopes.
So I'm going to introduce you now. Okay, this is Tim, first of all, Tim Roderick, who's been on the mountain rescue team for 10 years, 12 years,
yeah,
15 years?
About 10 years.
About 10 years. Is also...
Well, I'm a district kind of officer with the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
So what is your job, say, to...
Well, our job, I suppose, in places like this is to monitor and protect the site and to do surveys of what wildlife is there and to work with the local community and the farming community so that the sites are kind of farmed and managed in a way which is conducive with nature conservation.
Okay, and we've also got Kieran. Kieran joined the team about 3 or 4 years ago, 4 years ago, and he's also his day job, if you like. He's currently doing an archaeology course in the local Sligo IT. So this is Kieran Davis.
Hey, yeah. Kieran, how are you doing?
I'm not originally from Sligo, but I've lived here for not close to 20 years at this stage, and mountains like this, I've been looking at it out my window for years and going, oh, I must get up there one of these days. And only about 5 years ago did I eventually get to it and finally got up the mountain. And it's one of my favourite spots in the entire country at this stage.
Wow.
I mean, people rave about how wonderful and beautiful the likes of Connemara and Kerry and all these places are. I wouldn't move from Sligo at this stage. Like, this is my... I'm settled here at this stage. And I love these hills here.
And then obviously Heidi, your
own. Oh yes, I've brought my husband along for the walk, Steve.
Yeah, how are you, Julian?
And Stephen, you say busy playing music, obviously.
Very, very busy. Yeah,
playing music with the Water Boys.
And yeah, just back from a tour of America, and have a couple of months to go up mountains.
Well, this is it. How does it compare to playing in front of thousands to climbing the mountains?
This is a beautiful sanctuary of a place to come to. Yeah, I love walking up the mountain. Been doing it since we moved here 20 years ago. And this is amazing. Privilege.
Yeah. Right. Well, geez, without further ado, we should get started.
I think we should. It'll be tea time. Can you put that back in my...
Setting off towards Ben Bulbin, it's easy to see how the landscape has changed so drastically over the years. This entire area before us would have been completely covered in forests, But today, not a single tree can be seen. And most of it is actually farm bogland.
Oh, here we are. I always remember the radiators.
Still crossing radiators. Yeah. They do the job.
They do the job.
I mean, that's very considerate of somebody to, you know. Oh,
the sun breaks through the clouds, making the bog come alive. With a series of deep browns, yellows and greens all rolling out across the bog in front of us. It's a view that constantly changes with the light and the landscape. And for the first timer, it's pretty magical.
Heidi, can you tell me just about the first time that you climbed Ben Melbourne by yourself? Or was it by yourself?
Well, it wasn't by myself because I wouldn't do anything like that by myself. It's not cowardice, it's just I'm so full of common sense that I wouldn't have done it. But I mean, I suppose it was quite early on when I joined the team. So, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, it was one of the things we were doing some training. So we all came up the mountain. And, you know, it was if I had been wavering as to whether or not I wanted to do this, that just sealed the deal for me, because it was just such a fabulous experience to be standing on the top of the mountain. You know, that was me, I was sold on it.
As we get closer to the foot of Ben Bulbin, you can begin to make out a steep gully with a sheep track beside it. Now this is where the real climb begins, and so we take a break in the only bit of shelter we can find around us.
So great. We've just pulled in here, I suppose, at a little, what did you call this?
We call this, we call this the Booley Hut. Now, as far as I know, and I might get some help from my friend Kieran, it's probably some kind of enclosure, animal enclosure, shepherd enclosure. What would you say,
pretty,
Kieran?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, it would have been used when you'd bring animals up for pasture on the mountainside, and you'd kind of stay in it overnight.
All right. Yeah, it's just a little wood stone shelter.
Stone shelter.
Would it have been thatched or reeds or something?
Probably thatched or something fairly easily repaired anyway. Like, because it would only be temporarily used, so you don't need it to be
it's quite
massively
big, though. I mean, the perimeter of it. I mean, what's that, about 30 foot?
Yeah.
30 foot, obviously the roof is gone, but you've got lovely gorgeous green moss covering all the stones, so obviously it's been here for quite a long time.
It's been, it'd be impossible to date just looking at it, but it could date from any time from the early 18th century up to the 20th century in terms of use.
You know, even in a fairly featureless landscape, you really need to kind of pick out what they call your kind of comfort zones. And these are just areas, I mean, you know, it could be that rock over there. It's somewhere that if it was windy, I could put my back to it and I could just get out of the wind for 10 minutes just to kind of collect my thoughts, maybe have something to eat or drink. You know, it's kind of you're sort of constantly looking for little areas of refuge just in case you need them.
The scene around us is incredibly beautiful, but it's very desolate.
Steve, can I get a cup of tea off you before we just do the next bit?
There's no obvious signs of life, but wildlife ranger Tim assures me that there's actually plenty. All you have to do is keep a careful eye and ear out for it.
Tim, you said that you heard a sound there of a bird?
Yeah, I just heard a peregrine falcon there giving it an alarm call just over in the cliffs behind us.
Wow.
And the cliffs in this kind of plateau area are home to a couple of pairs of breeding peregrine falcons.
And they are there. You were saying basically that it's a pretty endangered species as well?
No, they used to be. 30 years ago, they were, you know, more or less on the point of extinction, you know, due to poisoning, basically, you know, them eating poisoned prey that had been poisoned. Now they're kind of off the danger list, and they're kind of relatively healthy populations of them in the northwest of Ireland and generally in Ireland. And, you know, the conservation status of them is fairly stable at the moment.
Right. And then even just on our right, we were passing, we saw a little foxhole.
That's right,
where there's
a
little fox cub. Yeah. So, I mean, you do. There's quite, even though when you're looking around Ben Bulbin, I mean, it does look quite barren, you know, but at the same time, there's a lot of life here.
Yeah, you don't see much here now, but I mean, all I can see and aware of now are things like skylarks and pipits, but obviously there's badgers, there's foxes, there's mountain hares, there's the peregrine falcons, there's buzzards, ravens. You'll get another bird which is very special to this area called a chough, which is sometimes known as a sea crow. It's a member of the crow family, if you like. It has an orange beak and orange legs. And again, this area is designated for that species because in a European context, they're quite rare. So this is a very special place for those.
You mentioned about the clouds, which again, even as we're here, we can start to see little pockets of light just kind of racing across the bogland, which is a beautiful green, yellow, kind of brown, real earthy kind of colour. You had an unusual bunch of that you brought up here, who are very much into the clouds.
They were. This was the Sligo Cloud Spotting Society. Led by Hans Whelan. They had a national cloud spotting festival and he wanted to bring a group of enthusiasts up here. So I obliged, of course, and we actually sat in this spot where we are now to have our lunch, I think, and to take a few photographs. And it was amazing, actually, because, you know, being a walker, I'm very grounded and I'm looking at the ground, I'm looking where my feet are going. And I'm with a bunch of 30 people who were just gazing up at the sky the whole time. I mean, it was quite surreal, really. But, you know, there's almost a kind of, it's a bit like fireworks. There's a sort of childlike innocence about just standing there and just gazing up at the clouds and seeing the shapes and, you know, not just the science behind it, but the magic behind it, really. And it was a great day. We laughed all the way up and all the way down.
I mean, basically, if you look up, there's anything happening from whitish grayish layer. And then if you look for a little while, you might maybe see a little blue coming through.
The first thing that struck Hans Wieland when he arrived here in Sligo from Germany in 1987 was just how beautiful the countryside around Ben Bulben was. The second was how incredible the skies were.
Cloud spotting might slow you down. It's not kind of you look up, you see something, you tick a box, and then it's gone. It's you have to kind of live with the clouds. You have to basically appreciate that it's a slow process. Sometimes nothing might happen for 3-4 hours, and then suddenly in the next half hour, lots of stuff happens.
Hans got his love and passion for clouds and sky gazing from his own father, who himself was a glider pilot in his spare time. Growing up in a small German village while Hitler was in power, Hans's father was determined not to follow in his own father's and grandfather's footsteps, both of whom were tailors. Instead, he dreamt of becoming a pilot. The only way to do that was to join the army.
Unfortunately, his eyesight wasn't as good as it should have been, so he didn't become a pilot, he became a navigator on a plane. So there's this interesting thing of my father having this idea, I want to leave this small village, all this stuff behind, I want to move out into the big world. And all he could do, because it was kind of Hitler's regime, that was the army. So he became this navigation guy in a plane. But his passion was always kind of glider planes.
And then when the war was over?
When the war was over, he basically had to go back and the whole thing fell apart and he became a tailor.
So he ended up going back
to become a tailor with all this kind of stuff in between.
But he still obviously had a huge passion.
He had this
flying.
Huge passion for flying and for nature in general. So I learned a lot of stuff by basically going with him on Sunday mornings, fishing or whatever. So that's how my love for clouds probably basically, I inherited that probably from my father's.
Hans has been cloud spotting for years, and he's a proud member of the Cloud Appreciation Society, which actually boasts 27,000 members worldwide. Last year, however, he decided to invite some of those members to the slopes of Ben Bulben for the second annual Irish Cloud Festival.
When I look up in Bulben, I see the mountaineering cloud spots, and I look up Donegal Bay on the other side, this huge area, and behind it is New York. That was kind of the seafaring cloud spotter. So we thought we have the perfect arena, the perfect stadium for a festival. That's why we had the idea to have the cloud spotting festival in this kind of arena, kind of a big stadium, and bring all the people together. I mean, then on the second day, on the Sunday, we went up in Bulben, and it's more or less like maybe going up on a... It's like going on a plane, because Ben Bulben is quite high. So we went up in Bulben, and we had, again, at the start, it was kind of stratocumulus, and there was kind of rain showers coming in. And then we went up, it all broke up. And if you have been on Ben Bulben on a really good, clear day, people see, you can see the five counties, Mayo, Roscommon, Donegal, Leitrim, Sligo. So it was like being really on a plane and looking down, and we could actually see that from the top of Ben Bulben, we could see rain showers coming in towards Moolac Moor. So, it's amazing.
When you're going up Ben Bulben, then obviously it's the fact that everything can change is so dramatic, because it is so high and it's so steep. Mm. So what were the people's reaction?
I mean, what they loved about that, you go up with other people and kind of they're all kind of in the same wavelengths. It's not just kind of something that you look up and you see something and you can't communicate to the other because they go, you're just stupid and silly. What is he or she talking about? So if you go up with a group of people who share the same passion, you can basically then try kind of to see, oh, did you see that?
Ben Bulben's beauty is not just confined to the skies that stretch over it, but it can also be found in the ground beneath its surface.
Okay, Julian, so we're just coming into the mouth of the cave here.
Right.
You probably noticed that the wind has dropped considerably. Just mind your head here, it's actually very low. The rocks are amazingly slippery.
Okay.
So just think Spider-Man, hands everywhere. Right. This one is particularly bad here. So this is quite a big cave.
Wow, this goes all the way to the back.
Yeah, it would, and all the way to the top as well. This would be a, you know, another point of refuge, you know, just in case if the weather really did turn inclement, let's say.
Okay.
And we have had parties of walkers that we've brought in here to have our lunch. Or something like that.
Wow, so this is, okay, it's a cave we're in. It's actually pretty long. How long, what dimensions would you say this cave?
I don't know, I mean, it looks to be, you know, maybe 60 feet or something like that long. Limestone, probably, I would, educated guess, I'd say it's probably water, you know, dug out with water, again, connected with all the kind of glacial pockets in this limestone that we're in.
And is there any stories attached to this cave?
Well, it's connected over across the way in the next range is Benwiskin. And there's a famous cave up there known as Diarmaid Ó Gruinneagh's Cave, and where they were kind of hiding out, as the legend goes. And I think this is connected to that. This might have been a little sanctuary that they might have hidden in.
Is there many legends attached to Ben Bulben?
I mean, I suppose the thing that I kind of learnt when I came here was we have Knock na Réidh, which is Queen Maeve's grave, which is obviously a very feminine piece of landscape and with the legend attached to it. And then we've got Ben Bulben, not because it's Ben, I know that, but I mean it's a very masculine feeling mountain, and you've almost got this kind of love affair between the two mountains. And some years ago when I first met Steve, he wrote a play about it, actually, kind of bringing in music, and it was about Knock na Réidh and Ben Bulben being in love but never being able to get together. But I think it's like any of these things, that you can just weave as many stories in and out of these places as you have time, really, because you know, that's, it's very rich in folklore.
If something comes to mind, it's Yeats' expression that he believed that there was a door in the cliffs of Ben Bulben that opened at night and the fairy hosts went forth from it. So for me, Yeats would be the inspiration there, or the primary inspiration as regards Ben Bulben, that he believed the fairy folk lived there. And that's okay with me. And I can imagine them, as we can looking out here now, travelling back and forth, maybe at night visiting the Moolac Moor fairies, going into the door in Ben Bulben, and on some occasions, and other times the door opening and the fairies of Ben Bulben visiting. And that's not too fanciful when you look out here. You can imagine it in the landscape, particularly maybe on a night of a full moon or something like that. It is an enchanted landscape.
And when you mentioned about the fairies coming down, I suppose that Yeats would have references as well. Are there fairies, or were there fairies in this area?
Of course, there were fairies. The story comes to mind of maybe a situation similar to the one we find ourselves in now, where an interviewer went out and to discover the beliefs of the countryside, and this man had some expertise in fairies, and they talked about fairies. for a long time. And when the interview was over, the interviewer asked the old man, "And do you believe in fairies yourself now, do you?" "Well, not at all," he says, "I don't believe in them. But, you know," he says, "they're there just the same." So I agree with that man that said that. I my response would be pretty much the same.
Okay, we're almost there. And it's the wind has completely dropped.
It's amazing.
The biggest difference that we're here. So this is the famous Trig Point.
Yes.
That we're just about to approach. The one thing that strikes me is just like the colour of the green is completely much more vivid. Mm-hmm. Light. Is that the light or is that actually...
I think it's... Tim was saying earlier about the air quality. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's... We're in the spring now, so I guess it's all reawakening.
And here we are. Wow.
Hello, everyone.
So this is it.
This is the highest point on this mountain anyway.
So how high are we?
527 metres.
526 on the map.
526 metres above sea level.
If you sit up there, you'll be 527.
Yeah. Go up another
the highest mountain in Connacht.
Wow, so who can point out to me what we're looking at here? Kieran, you tell me, you mentioned a few items before.
Well, I suppose, yeah, from starting from our left-hand side, which is going easterly, we have the nearest, next peak to us just down here is King's Mountain, which is part of this whole plateau area, the Dartry Range. In the background, you can see Loch Gill. The hills beyond that are the Slieve Dargan, Slieve Dane Mountains. Further in the background are the Brickleaves and Kesh Mountain, which is down sort of heading towards sort of South Sligo. Further out here then you have the edge of Ballisadare Bay, beyond them the start of the Ox Mountains, which go all the way out west towards Ballina direction. This one in front of us, of course, is Knocknarea. That's
so
Knocknarea there.
Queen Maeve's
yeah.
Is buried, reportedly buried.
You can see her on the top there. Just
yeah, you can just make out the cairn.
Yeah.
I mean, the amazing thing, just as you're pointing out all those features, is, I mean, even though it's very cloudy and you've got the kind of Jacob's ladders coming down from the clouds, but you can still really make out the mountains that maybe 50, 60 miles away.
I mean, yeah, you can pretty much see sort of like... How many counties? Donegal, Sligo, of course, Leitrim, Mayo. You could almost see into, well, not quite Galway, but close to it.
Steve?
Yeah?
How was your climb?
It's different every time. The light is different every time, depending on the clouds. And you can, if we get closer to the edge there's a beautiful patchwork of the fields. And when the sun is out, it's like a quilt. Rolled out, so every time you come up here there's something different. I'm just looking at the way the light is reflecting on the bay there, and it's just, I haven't seen it like that before, and I've been up here, you know, 10 times maybe.
Wow. So it is, yeah. It is different.
It's different every time. Different every time, yeah.
Alright, and Heidi, for you, is it about the ascent to the mountain, or is it about reaching the summit?
It's a little bit of everything, really. I mean, the journey to anywhere is incredibly important. Reaching the Trig Point here, the top, it's great because you get to see the view. But I mean, we have actually had the opportunity of being airlifted in by helicopter, and it's a completely different experience when you haven't walked up here to be landing here and then walking down. It kind of feels, you feel a bit of a fraud. Do you know what I mean? Of course, you still got the view, but you know what you haven't really done is earned the view, which is what we've done today. We've made a nice trek up, and we've had a lovely time making our way up here, and this is the reward.
As the view stretches out before us, Ben Bulbin has lived up to its promise of story, magic, and mystery, and one can't help but wonder what the next mountain will bring.